I'm Feman Rowe. Welcome to Live Like You Are Dying, the podcast. My personal journey of living with terminal cancer has led me to believe that most of the perceived problems and worries going on in our heads could be changed by embracing the simple fact that we all only have one life and that none of us are promised another day on this beautiful planet we all call home, regardless of our current health status. After all, would you seriously stay in the job you hate or the relationship that makes you miserable if you truly thought your life could end next year? Hell no! You'd be out doing the things that make you happy, and you certainly wouldn't be worrying about your dress size either. In this groundbreaking podcast, I interview people who are living incredible lives, not despite adversity, but because of it. Through their inspiring stories, you too will uncover the life-changing magic of living like you are dying. Your journey to a more connected, joyful, and compassionate life starts right now. Saima runs an award-winning restaurant, Masala Wala Cafe, in South London, and she's an entrepreneur. And thanks to a recent cancer diagnosis, she's now a writer and public speaker. After being diagnosed with stage 4 lung cancer at 29 years old, Saima's life changed forever. And now a cancer patient, she is determined to bring her worlds of food and health together, proving to herself and others that palliative care isn't the end of living. Her focus has been to raise awareness in BAME communities, as there is a total lack of conversation around disease, let alone cancer. This is due to taboo and lack of education and integration, especially with older people. Saima has written for Refinery 29, Huffington Post, Vice, and been featured in national campaigns for Macmillan Cancer Support, Cancer Research UK, and Roy Castle Lung Cancer Foundation. She guest co-hosted the BBC 5 podcast You, Me and the Big C, speaking about the topic of culture and cancer, and is currently working on a cookbook. I'm so excited to have Saima here. Saima, thank you so much for joining me.
Thanks for the intro there, Fee. How's it going?
I'm great. How are you?
Good, thank you. Yeah, sunny day here down in Kent.
It's raining in Scotland. What an impressive bio. You have not stopped, have you?
I'm a persistent individual.
I love that choice of words. So could you, for those listening who have somehow managed to miss your incredible story, could you give everyone an intro into what has been going on in your life in the last few years?
So, yeah, I mean, you know, growing up, so I'm British Pakistani, you know, daughter to immigrants, grew up in Kent, moved to South London and set up a restaurant there in 2015. So I was quite a relatively new business owner. Quite excited with it all and really enjoyed, you know, my job and the opportunities it brought me. But yeah, 4 years later, I got the diagnosis after quite a short spell of illness because lung cancer isn't very obvious. And yeah, April 2018, through A&E, unfortunately, because a lot of the cases do end up in A&E. It gets staged quite late, lung cancer. I got a life-changing diagnosis, a complete slap in the face. At the time I was incredibly unwell, actually, suffering with a superior cava obstruction, so essentially a tumor was blocking a main artery, and you need that to live, right? So
just, I love how blunt you are.
I know I need that artery just, you may know, I think sometimes you just, because you tell your story and it's almost like it's unbelievable, it does feel, yeah, like, because it's been a year now as well, you're like, wow, that happened to me. But, you know, that's the reality of what it is. But, yeah, it wasn't pretty. They did what they had to do. There was a bit of umming, obviously, with biopsies, a lot of uncertainty for a few weeks. And then, yeah, they came back with the conclusion, stage 4 lung cancer. So it metastasized to my liver, my bones. Where else is it? Liver, bone, lung. And my lymphatic, yeah. I've got some of my lymph nodes as well. So, yeah, that's what's been happening. And I went through an episode of post-traumatic stress, which which is, you know, quite understandable. And I believe a lot of cancer patients must go through that, especially with anyone with some sort of, you know, shock, trauma. And I've, again, being a persistent individual, using that word, I got myself kind of out of it through a lot of self-help and therapy and such. And I can't forget my supportive family and friends. They've been really, really great as well, working towards my recovery.
Do you know what I find amazing when you're speaking about this is I know you, so I know it was only April last year you were diagnosed. Yet for some reason, I always have in my head, like, it must be at least a couple of years. This girl has just... You've just hit the cancer community by storm. You've done so much in that, like, just over a year. It's phenomenal.
Do you know what? I think in that period of time, V, I was looking for people like me. And where I was lacking were, you know, there's a lot of... I needed storytelling and I needed younger people. So obviously you're a similar age to me. And obviously you get that fit. You go to the hospitals and the older people, they don't speak to you. They don't want to know. Everyone's full of fear and everyone wants a community or people to relate to. So I've always been good at networking. So working in the restaurant industry, the food industry, I know, you know, everybody from bakers to chefs to, you know, to investors and all that kind of stuff. Cancer completely new to me. I was like, I need to learn about this and I need people to familiarize myself with. So I think that's why I kind of, you know, we live in this beautiful day and age where you can go online and just find your tribe, and there I was, just went for it. But what I found was there's a total lack of black and Asian and ethnic minorities I'm talking about what we're going through, because I didn't realize that brown people could get cancer.
And I think this is what's so amazing when you talk about this. So when you talk about the BAME community, so the black, Asian and what's the last bit of it?
Oh, it's just minority. Yes, yeah, so minority. Ethnic minority.
Yeah. I just think it's amazing that you've brought awareness to that, because one of the chats we've had in an interview we've done in the past is where you say about how it's not represented in these communities. The charities aren't using people of colour. Mm. And you just brought so much. I mean, to me, I was like, oh, wow, like, I wasn't aware of this. So can you talk a bit about that?
Yeah, so what I found is... you know, I'm speaking to the charities as well, like, because I like statistics and facts and research. So for me, it was really good to, like, just find out why. I'm just a very inquisitive person. And, you know, through contacting the charities, and I'm like, you know, where have we gone wrong? Where's the mistakes here? And even the charities, they're saying top, you know, we're talking the big boys, because obviously cancer is charity based, unfortunately.
Yeah.
And again, the feedback was the same. They're saying, you know, there's a lot of shame. They're scared. People are scared of storytelling. A lot of people are happy to have their pictures taken. They'll be in the campaigns, but there doesn't seem to be a follow up. There's no storytelling.
Yeah.
Whereas I believe there is lots of storytelling online, and cancer is becoming a bit more kind of normalized. We're working on that, and I feel like we're living in a time of true change, where it is looked at as a chronic illness, just like diabetes, just like, you know, IBS or any other ailment, because it is just cellular. It's just cells gone wrong. And that's how we have to see it. We have to take that, you know, the fear out of cancer. And my coping mechanism was to reach out and to kind of establish a network of people that I can kind of relate to every now and then, like you.
It's amazing. I think what you do is phenomenal. I was just getting really aware there when you were talking that, so people listening who don't know what you've been going through recently, you sound so upbeat, so positive, so fiery. Can you give listeners an idea of what life is actually looking like for you just now?
So I've been through, treatment wise, I've had quite a good quality of life for the last year or so, up until I'd say, December. So unfortunately, the target therapy drugs, they just did not work for me. For some patients, they work 2 to 3 years, no problem. But for me, unfortunately, it was just like, nope. So I had progression. Physically, I felt shoulder pain at Christmas. And then it progressed into losing mobility in my right arm. And it turned out that I had brachial plexus compression, which is a tumour in my lymph nodes had been pushing on the nerves in my right arm, which is causing excruciating pain. So I barely slept. Didn't even walk at the best of times as well sometimes, because it was just anything was setting off the pain.
Yeah.
And I'd never ever experienced chronic pain in my life, but oh my goodness, it was quite the experience. And I think why I'm so upbeat now is just because I think there's nothing worse than chronic pain. I'm currently going through chemotherapy. I've had 3 cycles of it due to this these drugs not working anymore, and I've responded really well. And I'm dealing with the side effects. The side effects are brutal. They're brutal. I've lost all my hair. You get nausea, you get fatigue, you get neuropathy, all that, you get the whole shebang. But so far, I think I'm in a honeymoon period of where I'm experiencing the positive effects of the treatment,
yep.
Such as not being in pain anymore or taking morphine, which is just numbs your brain, right?
Yeah, it really does.
It really does. It puts you out. I do seem to be in this kind of buzzing honeymoon period mode at the minute. I'm just really thankful that the treatment is obviously physically responding. And even before having my CT scan results, I can say, okay, look, I've gone for a 10,000K walk. step walk. I'm obviously getting better. And there's no better feeling, right?
Oh, and we know our bodies. I always say, when you're living with a chronic or a critical illness, you're so in tune with your bodies. You know before the scan results, right?
I think going through what I've gone through this year, Fee, I am my own doctor. I know when I'm, because you're so in tune when you're in body now. Before cancer life, and you got the after cancer life. So before, I didn't think about my body. Everything was in my head. I was not conscious of how my body was feeling, but
mm-hmm.
You spend time with yourself and you really get to know yourself after this sort of experience. And I suppose people should be getting to know their bodies anyway, right?
Yep.
Regardless, you shouldn't take a life-changing moment like stage 4 cancer or a car crash or whatever happens to you to realize that, hang on, I've got a body here, like, let's get to know it. I've had a pain in my lower back for quite some time. Maybe I need to work on that, or this, just super in tune with it. And I've learned so much about it that I was flagging up the things and I was really pushing my treatment plan and I was kind of almost calling the shots. I really asked, for as much support as possible. Like, I want to speak to chronic pain specialists. I wanted physio. I wanted all these things. I suppose that's my pure determination. But again, everyone out there, you are your own doctor, regardless of if you have cancer or not.
Absolutely. And I think one of the things you're touching on there for me is if we're in tune with our body. So you and I were both diagnosed at stage 4, but maybe if we'd been in tune with our bodies, would we have been diagnosed earlier? If we'd been listening to those little niggles and stuff, because I always say it must have whispered for years, and it's why I didn't listen till it was shouting at me. Do you know what I mean? So it's that message that actually we do have bodies below our neck. It's not just our heads and all those thoughts. We do have this body that's sending us signals. With this podcast, as you know, the theme is about living like you're dying. So the message is that all of my wonderful guests, you've all experienced something that has allowed you to see your mortality and to change your life accordingly. And it's about getting that message out to the community so that other people in the world can start to live their life authentically and with passion and, as if they are dying. So what would you say the biggest change for you has been through facing a stage 4 cancer diagnosis in terms of how you've lived your life?
I'd say now everything's on slow-mo now, and you have to live in the present. You're only as good as your last scan or your last, treatment or things like that. There's lots of appointments to attend to, but I really, really needed to focus on my mental well-being, and that was very obvious after the diagnosis. And what I realised was that before that, you know, even though I got cancer at an incredibly young age, my mental well-being, it wasn't, you know, I was a highly functioning anxious person, I'd say. And that's why I was such a good business owner, and I was just getting all sorts done. And, you know, who runs a restaurant? Who starts a restaurant at the age of 26? You're like, it's insane. And I'm sure, again, like, you're overly accomplished as well. And there's things you're just like, hang on. You know, there's certain behaviours here. There's certain things here, yep, that I could have just gone a little bit slower. And now I realise that. It's just savouring the day for what it is and just taking a moment. But you can't be hard on yourselves. It's just a conditioning that we're all learning. Everybody collectively is now learning. I think health and well-being has become a lot more popular. We live in this great day and age that you can access so much now. The internet is readily there. It's all over Instagram and all these social media platforms. You know, we can look to live slower, and we can look to live better, and just love ourselves. Like, I had so much love and admiration for other people. I looked up to other people. I love my family so dearly, and I had a lot of love to give, but I was totally lacking love for myself, self-respect, taking time, you know, self-care, reading a book, just being slow. I think that's what I've really, really learned.
That's such a powerful message, because I think society now, it glorifies being busy, doesn't it? About, mm, you know, your diary being full and achieving all this stuff. And I've got, when you were speaking, I was like, oh, I was definitely a high-performing anxious person. I was like, that's me, tick. Because, yeah, I think so many people listening will really resonate with that. And have you found it easy to slow down?
No, it's not been easy. And it's behaviours that I'm trying to break behaviours of 30 years, right? So still working on it every day. Like, for instance, I've just, you know, I was telling you about chemotherapy. So, you know, you have a week where you're down and out. So my brain goes, oh, no, that means I have a week less in every month or whatever. And then suddenly you want to cram all these plans into the other thing. And I'm like, hang on, no, girl. Listen, you need to have one day on, one day off, one day on, one day off, because you are under treatment. And that's the reality, mm-hmm, of your life. And you have to make peace with that. You can't sit there and beat yourself up and go, I'm not doing enough. And we all have that little voice in our head, like, you know, oh, I'm not doing enough, I'm not being enough, I'm not seeing enough, I'm not socializing enough. And we all have that triggers, those triggers. But yeah, for me, it's just taking it one day at a time and keeping everything in pencil in my diary. That's what's been good for me coping wise.
Have you found, so for me, I find that it's in that thing between seeing the light of like, oh, actually I need to slow down, but also like, well, I'm living with stage 4 cancer, what if I die in 6 months and I want to achieve this thing in that time? Like, do you feel you're caught in between those two spaces, or do you feel you're able to manage that? She says asking for advice herself.
You're like, do I? But that's the whole point. You know, we're all trying to learn the balance here. And it's like, no one expected, when you get this sort of news, you're not prepared for it. And like, you know, I was running two businesses at the time. I was running a startup which I had to close down, and kept the predominantly the family restaurant. And those were really hard decisions to make, and they didn't come naturally, so they were really painful, you know, at the time. And it's just a behavior. You have to keep chipping away at it. And I can't say I have the answer either, to be honest. It's something I'm just really, really trying to be mindful about and work on.
What would be the advice you would give to Saima before cancer that you've learned since having cancer?
I'd say you are loved, and you're doing great. You're doing just great as you are, because everything's beautiful. Yeah, you're doing great. I unfortunately had a lot of trauma from a young age, so I think there's just been a lot of unkindness internally, like a lot of unkind dialogue, and to kind of flip that and realize that actually everything's fine. Like, I'm one of four sisters, I'm the oldest. So this is something I've been working on, which is, I feel like something's always going to go wrong. And that, you know, that we're all not going to be okay as a collective family, because we had quite a bit of trauma. So we had a lot of financial issues and things like that. Things that a 12-year-old wouldn't have to deal with. Mm-hmm. And we've all got through it and we love each other greatly. But there's just things, you know, now the worst has happened, which is a terminal diagnosis. I'm the older sister, so this is meant to be the worst thing that's happened. And we're all here and okay and thriving. You know, the world keeps turning. So for me, it's like, you're doing great. You're doing great. That's and that's where we all seem to be going wrong with the world, is that we just want more, or it's not enough, or we're looking to overachieve. It's like, achieve what?
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're achieving fantastic things anyway. And you can manifest and create and be successful. Someone's saying don't be successful, but just be a bit more mindful and just do stuff. I wrote a blog post over Christmas and I was like, do less, just do less, buy less, do less. Come on, guys. Stop stressing yourselves out. We really are at full capacity. And we're seeing this with modern day diseases and ailments and, you know, stress and all sorts of things going on out there. We really, really got to look after our bodies. Body is a temple.
And do you think the lifestyle that we're all living now, so that busy lifestyle and that stress and that pressure, do you think that's increasing the diseases that we're seeing in the world? Do you think that the two go together?
Well, I mean, I know, working off UK statistics, that cancer is more common. So it's 1 in 5 and now it's 1 in 2. And that has to be a direct result of environment, lifestyle. Because it's such a multifaceted disease. It's so complicated that obviously some of it is dietary, lifestyle. You know, a lot of people, they say to me, oh, the first question is, do you smoke? And it's like, are you kidding? I'm 30 with lung cancer. Yeah. Like a terminal diagnosis. You're saying I had a few cigarettes in my 20s. You know, I did smoke in my early 20s. That's not the be all end all. It has to be a mix of, you know, your mental well-being, your environment. You know, we have to talk about, you know, pollution. We have to talk about what we're putting on our skin. What we have to talk about, what we're eating. You know, it's confirmed. Like, Cancer Research on their website has it that processed meats is like pretty much a dead set reason for, you know, some at least 4 cancers. And you're like, okay, well, the information's there, yet we still go on and we're still living the way we're living. But I'm a strong believer in true change, and I really do think, like I said, like this time that we're living in our lives is a game changer. I think people are listening and waking up that we've got to live another way. Everyone's riddled with anxiety now and depression. It's completely rife. That's gone up. Like, maybe the science and the data is a lot more, maybe the data's there, a bit more specific. But the point is that everyone's highly anxious. Everyone is, not saying everyone, but it's on the rise. I don't want to fill people with fear, but the way we're living, we need to change. It's not working.
And I think you're absolutely right. There's definitely a change. I see, even in the 3.5 years since I've been diagnosed, that there is that change in the media where people are starting to be like, wait a minute, like, for what reason am I working myself into the ground if the only place that gets me to is illness and a premature death? So there is definitely a change. And, you know, there's more people talking about wellness and holistic health and slowing down. And I mean, it's amazing. It's brilliant that it's happening. And I think it will create big change. I do think we're right at the cusp of big transformation in society. Well, I really hope we are, because it's so needed.
It's so needed, but it's like going back to basics. This is just, you know, we're just going back to the old
100
years ago. Everyone was just eating an organic diet, keeping it simple, having minimal belongings, applying minimal products on their skin, and living mindfully, really. If you look at it that way, people were living for the day. But now we're like, everything's so like in advance, you know, everything's planned. It's like, oh, what are you doing next year? You've got to have this in the diary. You've got to have holidays planned, like planned holidays. That concept's totally out the window for me now as a cancer patient. But, you know, by the time you get to the holiday, sometimes you don't even need that holiday. And then you're, and people like borrowing extensive money. People, or it has to be like a really cool location. It has to be Instagrammable. You know, people aren't even like resting on holiday even. It's actually not even a break. You know, it's like, what are you showing? What are you doing?
Well, I think the social media has made, it's put this pressure where people are orchestrating their lives so that it becomes something that they can put on social media rather than enjoying the moment, isn't it?
Well, they're saying even food, people are eating certain meals because they look good as opposed to they make you feel good or have nutritional value.
It's frightening.
That's actually happening. Yeah, like, you know, yeah, it shocks me as someone who works in the food industry and you know, my focus is home cooking, so I believe in like cooking fresh food on the day, serving it up, real, you know, home style food. And it's like curry isn't the most like snappable food. It's brown. it's just gravy, but it's super nutritious and
it tastes, you know, great.
And it tastes great, and it's real raw ingredients. But the fact that people are out there, like, they're like, oh, that's not Instagrammable, I'm not going to eat that, but I'm going to go for a juicy burger, or I'm going to go for, you know, the... Or they're going to eat, like, Buddha bowls because they look good. And it's like, yeah. No, understand what's in there. What is that? What is that what you're eating? It's not... It felt like words fail me. Words fail me that people put their nourishment... No, put the aesthetics before nourishment, you know?
Yeah, you wonder what our grandparents and great-grandparents would have to say about that. Do you know what I mean? It's just laughable.
It is. I mean, like, down here in, like, London as well, in the southeast area, like, people just, you know, the advertising as well has changed. Everyone's just on Uber Eats or Deliveroo because we're so time-deprived because we're working so hard, apparently. You know, we're working even more harder, and it's just something's going to blow up, right?
Well, it is already, isn't it? Our health and the health of young people. So you and I were both diagnosed. I think you were 29 when you were diagnosed. Yeah, you were 29. I was 30. It's ridiculously young. So something is going seriously wrong. I was going to ask, a question came to me while you're speaking. When you're saying about people, you know, booking holidays a year in advance, and you said you don't do that now, you have cancer. Do you find that you don't plan too far in the future? Do you, in your bid to focus on the here and now and knowing that the situation can change at any time, what does your planning of life look like? Or does it just not happen?
I just have, so at the moment I've probably got plans in place for the rest of July, and I've got a few bits dotted around for August, and then I can't actually see September. I genuinely can't. It's like, so we're in July now. So I am about 2 months in advance-ish. But everything, again, is just really in faint pencil because I don't know if I'm going to feel good on a day. And I've really, really been working on being okay with that. And I think I finally am. Also, the physical, you know, the physical things that come with chemotherapy, that's very obvious. But genuinely, bringing it back to the moment and going, you know what, this day I need for me, or this day I need to do something else. I've really come a long way from that people pleaser from before the diagnosis, just saying yes to everything and people pleasing. And I'm the one who'd be like, you know, turning around to friends and saying, okay, wherever you want, where you want to eat, what you want to do. Just, you know, I was never kind of, I wasn't vocalizing what I needed.
Mm-hmm.
And now I'm just truly, okay, what does my body need to know? What do I need to achieve today? It's just a different mindset.
And how have people in your life reacted to those two changes? So the one thing where you're not making plans in the future, and also the other where you're saying, actually, no, this is what Simon needs. And this is, you know, I'm nurturing me now. How is the reaction
been? It's been quite good, to be honest. Everyone's really understandable. I think there's a place of fear as well, because they're like, oh, well, she's got cancer, that's fine. which is a thing, but
sorry, get her a jail
yeah,
free
yeah,
card.
Yeah, it's the cancer card, right? So you can there are times where maybe I've pulled the cancer card and I've gone, you know what, I just want to like just be like at home watching Netflix, I just can't be bothered. And but I think generally a lot of people are understanding, so I'll go on to, you know, I won't completely explain myself. So I found myself having to, so before I'd have to like justify myself, and now I've like got to the point where I don't need to justify myself. But you know, I'll probably pop a short comment down like, oh, you know, I've got too many things on that week, so I can't do that day, or that's, you know, that's my chemo week, or that's my downtime week, you know. I'll just be very, very abrupt and straightforward. Or I just, with friends, I'm like, if I don't feel it on the day, just, I'll tell you, or I'll give you as much notice. With events and such, or kind of like professional engagements, I just have to make sure that my treatment plan is working around those and that they match up okay, so that I won't feel, you know, I won't accept the jobs unless I know that I'm going to feel okay. So you have those 10-day windows. So I've got like a speaker's, you know, job. I'm at True Fields this weekend. And these are my in-betweeny good days. So it's just, it's boundaries, right?
And I think that's so important, isn't it? Boundaries. And what I was wondering as you were speaking was, do you think these are things that healthy people can put into their life? You know, because I know when I was working before, I'd be knackered after a day at work, and then I'd go out in the evening with friends, but actually I was like, do you know what, I want a bath and to read a book. But we don't feel like we can say that. Do you feel these are important things for healthy people to put into their life, these boundaries? Yeah,
absolutely. Set your boundaries. You don't need to, it's that FOMO, the fear of missing out, classic thing. Everyone, we all know what the right thing to do is, but it's just about implementing it and making sure we say no.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, and I'm not saying self-care is like, there's also, we need to define self-care and being selfish, because we have to be there for each other as well as people. So you've got to find time to be there for your friends, like they find time for you as well. It's about just managing time more effectively. It's not that we don't have time. We've just got to manage time more effectively and just not saying yes to everything, making sure you've got allocated time for self-care. And I think I was listening to like another podcast, because that's my form of self-care now, which is like relaxing and listening to pods and having baths and all that. And they were saying, I don't know who it was, but they were saying what they do is they on their to-do list, the first thing is to meditate, to do their yoga. And then it's the kind of the rigmarole of the day-to-day routines. But the first things they have to do is meditate, yoga. That is on top on the list. And my mistake before was emails, you know? You know, emails? Work calls, you know, errands, you know, all these busy, busy things that come with like running businesses and stuff. And then I put myself behind that. So I didn't find time to meditate. I didn't find time to do that yoga that I've been meaning to do. I didn't have that, you know, that 20 minutes to myself reading a book or having a bath. My to-do list was just full of work. And there's no joy in that. Where's the self-care in that? You need to feed yourself and nourish yourself and then put yourself out there.
I love that. I think that's the key message from this, I think, isn't it? It's put you first. You are at the top of your to-do list.
Yeah. And like I said, it's like got to change that mentality of, you know, getting that balance of self-care and selfish. Now, I'm not saying go be a selfish mofo and like say no to everybody and just do what the hell you like. No. You can be organized. You can kind of have the self-care, and you can have the successful businesses and the successful careers and whatever you're after out there. You can have the houses and the things and making more money and all these opportunities, you know, all these beautiful things you want to do. But as long as you look at yourself first, that's really important.
I love that. What would be, so for those of the listeners that, you know, haven't had a massive trauma, who aren't facing a stage 4 diagnosis, who've not had some of the other traumas that some of my other interviewees have had around facing their mortality. So those people that haven't had that wake up call that I call it, what would be your key message for those listening?
I'd say if you haven't had that, I'm sure that the people that are listening to this who haven't been through a life-changing situation are intrigued, because it's called Live Like You're Dying. So I'm pretty sure the people that have clicked on this pod, they will at least have intrigue. My advice would be, I was going to go Live Like You're Dying, which I've heard by somebody. I'm joking. But yeah, I'd say, yeah, you just need to look to live a bit more purposefully, and just really, really just take stock of your situation. And if you're struggling, just try and, it's easy to say to, oh yeah, no, you know, try and get out of that spiral. But I think honestly, prioritizing your mental well-being and your physical well-being, that's a start. You know, get the therapy, read the self-help books, do that yoga that you've been thinking about, change your diet, like make yourself feel better. Don't turn to alcohol, don't turn to, you know, junk food or like you know, all these short-term I've got chemo brain. Let's
that's all right,
guys. I'm saying it, guys, I've got chemo brain. My brain is not working like it used to. So I think this is very obvious that my thought process is not as articulate.
You're
as
doing amazing. Honestly, I'm in awe of you. It's phenomenal.
But yeah, I would say just, yeah, that my advice would be just look to improve, you know, those small improvements and just work with them. If you don't find the right thing, so say yoga isn't your jam, try something like running. If running isn't your thing, don't be put out. I think me before would have been very quick to give up. So mm-hmm. I'd be like, oh, I'm going to try cycling. Oh no, I can't climb that hill. That's me, I'm done. But be persistent and try something that works for you. It doesn't have to be all this yoga and like well-being and meditating and all that kind of stuff. Meditation can be just focusing on, like, one of the main techniques that got me out of panic attacks was just focusing on five things in the room for about a minute. And that immediately brings down your heart rate, and it immediately brings the noise down in your brain.
That's just such a good tip.
Yeah, just silly little things like that, just making little nuggets of calm in the day, just so that you can be a better mother or be a better business owner or whatever you're doing. I can guarantee you, your life will be happier and better, whatever you're looking for, if you just do something for yourself.
I'm going to ask you a question now that I ask everyone that I interview. And you might, I don't know if you've heard any other ones, so you might have spotted it, you might not have, but I'm hoping not, because I like to catch people off guard with it.
Oh no! Off guard question.
Well, then I get an honest answer. The question is, if you knew that you were going to die tomorrow, what would you do differently today?
Dead set. I'm dying tomorrow.
Dead set. There's no getting out of it.
What am I going to do today?
What would you do differently today?
What would I do differently?
Yeah.
Okay, so today I'm off to like some sort of dinner. So I'd cancel that. Right. Family, friends, it's time. I'm off ski. I'm on the off now.
I'm on the off now. I love it.
But I don't think I'd do anything ridiculous. I think I'd just spend time with the people that I've loved, and I'd bow out. And I'd probably, you know, I've just finished Dr. Catherine Mannix's book with the end in mind. So the dying process, if I'm due to die tomorrow, apparently it's all right. So they've pulled the drugs and stuff in the hospital, so it won't be in pain. I won't have to worry about that. And I've got morphine at home as well, so I suppose I can crack on with that.
I love how you're all about the drugs. I've got drugs in the hospital, I've got drugs at home.
I think a lot of the fear of dying is actually about the pain.
Yeah.
And that was, for me, was the big obstacle, was what's it feel like? What's dying must be excruciating. Like, but actually, no, we live in the Western world. We're really lucky in that respect. Mm-hmm. That, you know, we have all these fantastic, you know, hospices and organizations in place. We've got everything in place. So it's the process of dying is actually not really a big worry. I think it's just the fear of, like, you know, the pain and all that. So that's why when I say, oh yeah, look, I've got morphine at home, I'm joking about it.
I know, I love it.
Yeah, like, you know, as a stage fourer, you're registered to a hospice. So, yeah, I'd call my local hospice and I'd gather all my family and friends up. I wouldn't probably do anything out of the ordinary because I'd probably just want to have a calm, quiet moment with my family and just thank them for just being there on my, you know, my living journey, inverted commas.
Funny because you said, oh, I wouldn't do anything extraordinary. And most people, they say, like, I hear answers like, well, I wouldn't jump out a plane or something. I just tell my family I love them. And more often than not, that's the answer, isn't it? It's, I would just tell the people I love what they mean to me.
Literally,
that's what it's all about.
Well, when this happens to you, you really, really take a look at what really matters, which is not the next successes or not the next, you know. It's not, you know, at the time I was like trying, you know, I was trying to have a baby, I was trying to buy a house, I was starting up a new business, I was doing all these things. But when something like this smacks you in the face, oh my God, it really simplifies things and you're like, right, what do I love? You know, and it's your family and your friends and people. It could be anything, it could be your cat. Maybe I need to round up everybody and just, it could be just my cat, you know? Just love and kindness and gratitude. That is literally what it all boils down to at the end of the day. And I've been there, you've been there, you've been on the operating table. Like, it's not nice. It's not nice facing death, but it really, really, I can't imagine my life without being through that experience now, because I feel like I'm just walking with purpose. I walk with my head higher. I just love myself now, you know? And I didn't have that before. I was of service to others, which I love, and I still am, because obviously I'm still having conversations, like, you know, I'm meeting completely cool people like you, and, you know, I'm trying to get more Black and Asian ethnic minorities talking about cancer and all that kind of stuff. But I just, yeah, I feel like a weight's lifted off as well. Do you feel like that?
Yeah, and I'm sitting listening here like, I love you, you're amazing. Like, I'm just like, oh, you're just absolutely speaking my language. It's just, yeah, because you realise what really matters. It isn't all that stuff. And it's that funny thing where people are like, oh, I've got a bucket list. But see, once you actually have a terminal diagnosis, you don't have a bucket list anymore, because you realise that stuff doesn't matter.
From day one, bucket list, that, well, I mean, it's not, I get it, people want to tick things off and that, but for me, I was like, no, I don't really need a bucket list. I've got some things to achieve over time, but again, slowly and progressively. And what, you know, like, I'm writing a cookbook, but you know, what wasn't part of the plan was having chronic pain for the last 4 months. So I've just come out of that and I've started writing again. And my cognitive function as well, and all that. It's all, I'm picking up, because it did actually affect my speech. That's how much pain I was in. Yeah, because your brain's just doing overtime, right? Everything's the only way I could compare it to is that everything's on fire, right? So you just need to turn the cooker down a little notch. And, you know, because cancer's stressful as it is on the best of days. And then on top of that, you've got chronic pain. So for me to, you know, I'm still kind of in recovery really from that period of time. So I'll get back to those recipes. But this time around, it was different. I just wasn't hard on myself. So there's no deadline, because I just couldn't even forecast that four to five month time period of just completely on overtime, you know?
And it will happen. Like, it will happen when it's meant to happen. It will be born into the universe when it's meant to, do you know? We don't need that pressure.
No. And the pressure, I'd say it's a learning process, ongoing. I'm not the Dalai Lama. Everyone is just learning. We're all here growing together. Like, I take things away from you, you take things away from me. It's a constant thing. But yeah, for me, it's just taking that pressure off yourself, not that voice in your head, like, just being kinder to yourself and realizing, yeah, it can be as simple as just, right, I've got it okay. Someone out there is possibly having a worse time than me. Someone out there is having a better time than me, but I'm just living my truth, my situation. This is my journey, you know?
You're amazing. I'm just sitting here like, oh, wow, you're amazing.
Well, see, I read your book and, you know, you've got, I think what's interesting is we are cleverer than we think, but it's actually actioning the advice and making sure that we're living our truths, right? And we're living, I can tell you this all day long, but I can tell, you know, I can tell you there's days I struggle, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah.
But I think what's amazing about you is you're so raw and real about the struggle, because I think going back to that social media thing is, you know, I hear people and they're like, I'm so depressed because I look on social media and everyone's life is perfect and mine isn't. And what's amazing is people like you and other people in the cancer community, and increasingly other people as well, are saying, do you know what? Life is hard. Like, we're doing our best, but there are moments where it's so hard, where I'm in too much pain to get out of bed, where all my hair falls out, where I'm vomiting in the bath, where, do you know what I mean? Like, and it's about being the light within that darkness, but showing both sides. And I think that's so powerful. Yeah.
There's a big change in social media, and like, we have to face it. It's a big part of our lives now. You get up in the morning, you do activities, and then what? You look at your phone. You can't escape it. And I loved that you had a 6 week detox recently?
40 days. 40 yeah.
That's like that film with Josh Hartnett. 40.
Yep, 40 days, 40 nights.
40 days and 40 nights. I mean, how was that for you? Because I've not done that long detox, really.
My brain totally changed.
Wow.
Like, I started to... I'd done it before. So I did three weeks traveling around Europe where I didn't take my phone with me. So I didn't have... And that was following my diagnosis last year. And so I'd had that and my brain started to change. And this time was just not going on social media. So I still had my phone. I was still using, like, WhatsApp and making phone calls. But not having that, like... It'd be like, I'd be in a moment, I'd be like, oh, I need to put that on Instagram. And then I'd be like, Mom, I'm not using Instagram. And I'd be like, oh, I don't even need to take a photo of that. And it made me really hyper aware of that. What are we doing things because we want to do them, or are we doing things because we want to put them on social media? And who are we putting them on for, and all of this? And but it's this catch-22, because also I need social media to get my story out there. So I always say I've got a love-hate relationship with it. I don't like what it does to my mental health, because I'm quite an obsessive person, so I get really addicted to social media. But I also love that it gives me that community, and it allows me to connect to people all over the world going through similar stuff for me. So it is that, it's got pros and cons, right? And I think it's about how we manage that in a way that best serves us.
For me, it's about authenticity. So I'm relatively new to social media. I spent 4 or 5 years selling curry, you know, try and sell curry. Like, there's so many angles you can do, right? And then, you know, you have to put the coriander on the curry to make it look good. Sometimes there's no coriander, you know, it's like, but then for me to then jump on the personal social media and be so personal, you know, that was a decision that I made, because it was for me. You know, I didn't want to be ashamed of my diagnosis, lung cancer. There's a lot of taboo around it anyway, the best of days. And then you've got shame from the Pakistani community. And then you've got, there's a lot to be ashamed about. So for me, it was like it's a coping mechanism, was to come out online, share my stories. As long as this serves me, I will continue to share. But yeah, I've had intermittent times where I'm like, what the hell am I doing on here? Why am I scrolling through this? This is not helping. You know, and you come off it and you're like, you feel like rubbish, because so-and-so's on holiday, you've got the hot dog legs, you've got this and that going on, and so much noise. And that's what I find, is it's so noisy, but there's so much good to come from it. And it's the authenticity that I'm looking for now. You know, people that are putting things out there and being so generous with their knowledge and what they've been through with their experiences. And generally, it sounds really bleak. It's people that have gone through deaths, through, you know, loved ones committing suicide, through acid attacks, through, you know, all these awful things, through cancer. But that's where I'm finding the light. And these people that are, you know, not holding back and not putting things up and saying they're happy for the sake of saying they're happy.
Yeah, they're just being real.
That's it. It's like, I'm having a terrible day, great. I'm having a good day, great. You know, at least you're being real. It's just the authenticity. That's what I'm looking for these days. And I think we are collectively, that's what we're looking for. We've been fed this thing. We didn't know social media, but, you know, it's just crept up on us. It was kind of thrusted upon us by Apple and what have you. And we're still learning how to cope with it. we're still learning. It's just still quite a new thing that we've had to introduce. We're the kids from, we still remember our happy teens before the, you know, the internet and stuff. Like, I didn't get dial-up internet until I was about 17. I think I was late on the boat. But, you know, I've got good memories of my childhood just learning to be bored.
Yeah. And kids now don't have that.
No. We're just so... Like, I listened to a whole album the other day and I was like, I can't remember the last time I've done this.
Oh, that sounds like bliss.
And it's like, you know, everything. And it's like the little bits in between and stuff. And you're like, wow, wow. Everything's on shuffle and, you know, Spotify. And it's all quick, quick, quick and segmented. And yeah, it's a crazy time. But I think there's a lot of good to come from it. But yeah, you have to protect your energy. You've got to make sure it's serving you. And you just got to be mindful of what you're posting because there's, you know, I'm sure the evidence is all going to be there. And you've spoken to, you know, Dr. David Hamilton and stuff like that. And the evidence is coming through now. Like, you can't pretend to be happy to yourself. Like, because you go to bed with yourself every night, your brain.
Yeah. And it knows.
It knows. It knows if you're not happy, you know. It knows if you're, you know, you're struggling. It knows that you... It knows when you're sad. Like, you can't hide from yourself, right?
But we do. I think that's what we're using food and alcohol and drugs and social media to just not look inwards.
Yeah. But I tell you what, all the answers are within, Fee.
Oh, they are.
Hell yeah.
You're speaking to a yoga teacher.
Oh, I'd love to do yoga with you. It'd be crazy.
Oh, maybe one day.
Oh, we'd probably be too chatty, though.
I'm dead chatty, in case you hadn't noticed.
Bless you.
I'm going to wrap up the podcast there because I could just talk to you for hours and hours. What I'm loving is the key things around this were self-love, kindness, telling the people you love that they matter, and just slowing down and being authentic. So just some amazing messages. I wondered if you could tell everybody how they can find you on social media and your blog and stuff, because you're just incredible to watch your story and everything unfold.
Well, thank you, Fee. It's been lovely to speak to you today. And it's funny how those messages are so simple. They're simple words, right? And we just have to, like, you read that back and I'm like, I need to implement those in my life.
I'm doing it.
It's a work in progress. It's like every day, and you're just like, wow, it's just simple words. So everyone, you can find me www.curryandcancer.com. All the social channels, I'm on at Curry and Cancer. My restaurant, Masala Wala Cafe, that's at Masala Wala Cafe. masalawalacafe.co.uk. That's me.
Amazing. Well, I hope everyone that's listening, do check out Saima. There's never a dull moment on your social media. I love it. You just never know what's going to come up. It's brilliant. But it's great. I love it. You keep it really real, really fresh.
Thank you.
Is there anything that we've not covered that you wanted to mention?
Apart from that, so I've got a Facebook group. So anyone who's from the Black, Asian, ethnic minority communities, so that's Italians, we're talking Polish people, we're talking Chinese, anybody, people of colour, anybody that has difficulty or has cultural challenges with cancer, you can find a private Facebook group. It's BAME Cancer Support. So if you search that in the search bar, there's a growing community online. It's a safe space just to talk about our cultural challenges on top of living with the big C. So I just thought I'd do a little shout out there.
Absolutely, because that is amazing. Like, I think, well, I've told you so many times, but I just think it's incredible you've set up that community. And also, for me, just shocking that community didn't exist.
No.
Do you know what I mean? So how wonderful that you've done it and that all these people have that gang, that tribe that you could share this with, I think is amazing. Honestly, should be really proud.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
So thank you so much for coming on today, especially when I know you're going through chemo and stuff. I know how tough that is. So thank you so much for taking the time and being... Your chemo brain did not come across at all. So thank you so much.
There were some stutters there, though, and I was like, really? What's going on with you? But yeah, no, it's been always a pleasure. Always a pleasure, Fee.
Brilliant. Thank you. You take care.
Take care. Bye.
Thanks. Bye. I'm Fee Monroe, and you've been listening to Live Like You Are Dying, the podcast. You can follow me on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. And if you haven't yet, then go to your podcast app and subscribe, rate, and review this podcast. Join me next time for another inspiring interview about living like you are dying.